Welcome to Goonie Quest, episode 346. I'm your host, waiting in lobby for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, with me as always.
Blue Canary on the outlet by the white light switch that watches over you, David Bernie, Family Master.
Slightly sniffly in Japan, Michael Baker, Gaiji Minogatari.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer. Also known as Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
More like Smokin' Joe Lamer.
Oh!
Boom! Oh, you got me.
And we're recording a day early in observance of Final Fantasy Day.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is here. Finally, good Final Fantasy is here.
That's right.
Of course.
Yep. We don't have to play the other one.
I turned on my PS5 for the first time in several months just to make sure that it was updated enough that I'll be able to just pop in that disc and fucking play games. God damn it, I'm so tired. Hooray, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Hooray.
Do you have 150 gigabytes of hard drive space available?
Oh, I deleted a bunch of shit.
Great job.
Oh, I should probably check on that.
Well, I'm really glad I put in that 1 terabyte SSD a while back.
Godspeed you.
Yeah, gee, I mean, Final Fantasy is almost as big as a Call of Duty game now, huh?
Yeah, except this one has actual content.
Right. Infinite fun.
You are right. This is actually going to be a good game.
That's video games, baby! Video games are back. Let's see. The only news that I'm aware of from this week is really fucking depressing.
More than
fuck you,
over the last Over the last 2 days, we have seen 1,540 known layoffs that I am aware of. 900 coming from Sony yesterday, in addition to, I believe these are different from the layoffs to Supergiant, which is a Sony. I'm not sure if they're literally a subsidiary or if they just only ever have worked with Sony.
Supergiant?
The Until Dawn people.
Supergiant. So who's doing the 80s people?
But who's doing the new?
Oh, I'm thinking of Supermassive, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Whatever, man. I'm tired. Something. Fuck you.
It's fine. Listen, I'm
go fuck yourself.
I rarely get to point out someone else fucking things up. Okay, like, give me this one moment.
Okay, it was Supermassive Games, and yeah, they are not owned by Sony. They made Until Dawn, so different thing. Although they are apparently involved in the Until, like, it was real fucked up to see big ol'. So yeah, they're doing layoffs. Sony's doing 900 layoffs. That is 8% of the specifically within the PlayStation division. It's 800. That's 8% of the division. They're shutting down the London studio. Insomniac, Naughty Dog, and some of their and Guerrilla have also all been hit with layoffs. I'm gonna sit here and say there's basically no human way to justify certainly Insomniac layoffs given Spider-Man 2's performance. This is disgusting.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
But like Horizon as well, like that's been doing well for them. So the London studio, for those unaware, that's a really fucking old Sony studio. From what I recall, that's a studio that existed when Sony bought Psygnosis in like 1993.
Jesus.
Boy. 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's a real old studio. It's been through a lot. It's been a lot of different things. For a while, it was like it helped incubate like their European studios. Sony used to have all sorts of like had like five different studios in the UK specifically, because again, Psygnosis was a very large UK publisher way back in the day. But you had, but they've slowly winnowed them down and winnowed them down. Way back in the day, actually, I think at least one of those branches actually got killed so that they could devote more money to Sony London's The Getaway. A game no one honestly remembers at this stage other than a vague, oh, I remember that. That was like the thing that sort of looked like GTA, but it was in London. But yeah, it was a company with a very long history that had done a lot of different things. Most recently, they had been turned into like the company that Sony made be like the ones that made mid-budget VR games. And now they've been, yeah, they're being obliterated. The real, one of the real true nightmares of this is that since it's layoffs across many countries, you can see full well that a company will treat its employees exactly as well as it is forced to by law. The U.S. The U.S. employees were told to get the fuck out by end of day. The U.K. employees were essentially forcibly given notice because you have to submit, because of the entire redundancy process in the U.K. that requires you to submit, like, this is the proposal for who we're going to cut and this is why. And in Japan, they basically have, like, a few people have been let go, but you can't really do mass layoffs without proving to the government that you're about to go out of business. So,
yep.
A handful of employees were apparently given, like, we're going to help train you for your next job. So, yeah. My extremely political statement is, do everything in your power to destroy at-will employment. Got it.
Yep.
Let's see. Otherwise, as of today, Electronic Arts announced 640 layoffs as part of them. So every 10 years, Electronic Arts decides that they want to rely less on content licensed from other studios, and then like we go through a full circle cycle of that becoming more and more of their business until they decide that they don't want to do that anymore. And that seems to have been what happened, at least part of their justification for this one. Realistically, the actual thing is that they initiated a massive stock buyback program last year, and that this this helps keep the coffers going, since they spent, you know, some $325 million on that. But the actual so the actual known casualties of that one seem to be, Respawn was working on some sort of single, like largely single player focused Star Wars FPS that seems to have been shit canned. There's some other stuff that there's some sort of like single player focused Battlefield title that seems to have also been shit canned. So you know, the usual companies pulling back. They did, they said some things that are, like, interesting to hear. They've maintained that BioWare hasn't been hit with major cuts, that their focus is currently still Dragon Age 4, and that after that they'll be moving on to Mass Effect 4. We'll see what happens. I would suspect that if we see Mass Effect 4 before 2029, I'll eat my hat. But yeah, so that's the state of the layoffs, which is probably going to be the horrible overriding trend for the rest of the year at the least. But it feels wrong to not mark to not mark this and once again say God fucking damn the executive class. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. There's no good news this week other than video games releasing. Let's see.
This is generally good. Yes.
Yeah, the games releasing are still great, which makes all of this even more horrible.
Larian Studios told people to apply to them.
Yeah, if you want to work at a place that seems like it's not yet run by vulture capitalists, yeah, probably go with Larian. That seems like a nice place if you can manage it.
Yep.
Fireminer asked if anyone has tried the Unicorn Overlord demo. I know what that would do to me, and I don't have time. I don't have time yet.
Yeah. I just got caught up in all the other demos, like Contra and Grand Blue Operation Fantasy Relink. Blue. Yeah.
Relating to this, Fireminer asks, the weird thing is that Respawn Star Wars game is the one thing that the franchise really, really needs. I question whether Disney and people who they license out have any idea about coordinating this franchise. I think it's quite evident that Disney has a very confused idea about what Star Wars is as a franchise, which is why, like, you'll get individuals that have ideas, like the people that made Andor or Filoni, and then, like, the rest of the brand kind of just sort of swings and pivots. But I think also some of this is, like, someone probably looked at the Ubisoft Star Wars game and decided that these two things would be competing, as well as, like, I don't think that's a good argument, but I would imagine that someone looked at it and said that, as well as, like, the Star Wars license is much less lucrative for EA, both because they've had such up and down luck with it, so it's not a guarantee for them, and it's also a case where when they no longer have the lock on it that they used to, like before when it was, because there was a period of like 4 or 5 years where the Star Wars license was just theirs to do with as they pleased, and that was a good setup for them to be able to sort of release things and say, like, we are the only Star Wars game that is doing X, and now that that's no longer the case, that looks less appealing to them, and that's still an extremely expensive license, so they pivoted again away from that, and it kind of sucks. Is anyone surprised by the lack of good Star Wars games since Disney took it over? Not really. Back in the day, you got banger after banger, just a few months apart. X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, Dark Forces, Episode 1 Racer, Battlefront, Rogue Squadron, Jedi Academy, KOTOR, Force Unleashed, blah, blah, blah. Now you just have Fallen Order, Survivor, and Skywalker Saga. Is this really Disney's mismanagement, or because the games take longer to make? I mean, you're also ignoring that, like, you brought up some of the good ones, but there was also just dozens of awful ones that no one wants to remember because they're Jedi power battles. Star Wars Demolition, Star Wars Bounty Hunter, Star Wars the Clone Wars on PS2. Yeah, the Phantom Menace game. Like, there's some really great ones. Like, the law of averages worked out well in their favor at some point, because, like, you'd get some that were, like, Factor 5's, like, Rogue Squadron, Battle for Naboo, Rogue Leader, Rebel Strike. Like, those are all great. KOTOR's great. And if you're lucky, unlike me, you don't play things that are called Star Wars Bounty Hunter, and you don't feel the clawing grip of, oh, this is what it means to have awful level design. I'm sorry, that game scarred me pretty deep. Like, as like a 12-year-old playing that, I remember thinking, like, that was the first time I was cognizant of, oh, this level design isn't, like, I'm not bad at this game. These levels are just bad. They don't fit together well. And I just remembered another bad Star Wars game that time has utterly forgotten. Star Wars Obi-Wan for the original, exclusive to the original Xbox. Exclusively a launch title. A prequel to the Phantom Menace that came out 2.5 years after the Phantom Menace. Extremely strange. Not good at all. I don't think this is, I think the for good and ill, I think with the games for a long time, Disney was content to just sort of let the chips fall where they may. They certainly had concept approval and rights of approval, but they weren't, like, super concerned about it, because, like, where EA every 10 years decides that they want to be less beholden to licensors that they have to work with, Disney every 10 years is like, man, video games make a lot of money. Why don't we just own that space? Why are we not huge there? And then they put a bunch of games into put a bunch of money into in-house production and then realized that, wait, video games are really, really, really lucrative when you're successful, and they're a huge money pit when you aren't, and someone looks at how long it takes to make a AAA game and says, fuck this, and divests themselves of it and destroys, like, thousands of jobs. Disney Interactive's, there was a Disney Interactive up until, like, 2016, so we're at the point where someone is looking at it and being like, why don't we own this space? And then they spend $1.5 billion investing into Epic to try to festoon Fortnite with even more Star Wars and Marvel bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. Give me more.
Do they need to spend $1.5 billion to do it though?
I mean, no. No. It does seem pretty dumb.
Today, I played the Dark Forces remaster, and I think it's quite good.
I thought you were going to say, today I played Fortnite, and I'm disappointed.
No.
Dark Forces is pretty good. The only version of it that I've ever played is the PS1 version, and that version is just absolute steaming dog shit. Don't play it that is. Version.
You have to play... Even if you just want to pay the $6 and play the original DOS version on in a DOS emulator on Steam, it's like, it's worth it. I don't know. It runs great on Steam Deck, too. But
yeah, the probably grab the remaster if you got a choice.
At this point, the remaster is only $30, and it is deck verified already. Mm-hmm. And
it's apparently good on everything. So,
by default, it uses hardware rendering, which is, you know, basically the remaster, but if you switch to the original software rendering, you can actually play it as it was originally intended, and it's like, oh, that's blurry, and it's 4x3 and truncated. And
I'm always in favor of giving me the option to use the original graphics, so I respect it.
Yeah, I respect it, but I don't want it.
I might try it.
It gives you an appreciation and realize why you don't want to.
Yeah, no, I did. I switched back and forth a couple times, and I'm like, okay, no, I appreciate what they did here, yeah.
Up next, please remaster Star Wars Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight.
Yes, please. I love that game.
Sure. And its expansion pack. Let's see. To hit another one of these. Speaking of the prequels, one of the few things Star Wars fans can all agree on is that the games that came out of the prequel period were dope. Well, the ones they remember. You don't remember Star Wars Flight of the Falcon. But yeah.
Most of those games being trash.
There's plenty of good ones from that period. It's just there's also plenty of bad ones because you don't remember Star Wars Demolition. Remember when they just
remember Star Wars Demolition.
Remember when making a Twisted Metal knockoff was like just, oh, that's a thing that you do with your license. WWE Crush Hour, sure.
Oh god.
WWE
Crush Hour. Oh, why would you curse my brain with that?
Because for me, it's always like this. Except when they didn't like Masters of Terrascazi. Man, fucking Masters of Terrascazi. What a game. Might actually be the only video game with a playable EU stalwart Mara Jade. If you go back and examine the actual...
No, I'm just making noises to... Okay, cool.
If you go back and examine the actual films, all their coolest scenes look like they could have come out of video games. It's the biggest reason to their failure. Lucasfilm positioned the prequels as linchpins of a multimedia franchise instead of actual films. I get the sense, for one reason or another, those are the movies that Lucas wanted to make, for good and ill.
As I recall, Lucas's wife won several awards for her editing work for the original trilogy.
Ex-wife, so, but yeah. that's also an important piece of context.
And importantly, not X when they did the first three, yes X when they did the second three.
Yeah. Or prequel three. Mm-hmm. The second set. But yeah. I feel like but I feel like for good and ill, those are the movies he wanted to make. I do think that there's a lot of factors that factor into why those movies are what they are, and I don't feel fully capable of diagnosing it. I do think that a certain set of assumptions ultimately grew around Lucas that caused people to like bring up even stories where it's clear that he's like absolutely making a joke have caused people to assume that he's just insane. I think the most direct of those being the infamous story from Force Unleashed development, where the development team in a meeting with him asks about like, well, you know, the Sith characters you're going to be playing as Darth Vader's apprentice, shouldn't he have like a Darth title or whatever? And he's like, yeah, sure, that sounds fine. And they ask him for suggestions, and he fires back with Darth Insanius and Darth Icky. And obviously the answer is he doesn't give a shit. But they keep expecting him to come up with the name. I guess to give it more cred or whatever. And he doesn't offer them anything else, and so they just move on, and that idea never gets revisited. And, like, that's obviously him trolling. Like, it's obviously him being like, man, I don't care, come up with a name. But, like, you know, the in the telling it has mutated into, like, oh, he seriously thought that they should use these, and it's like, nah, man, he doesn't care. Didn't care. But
I thought I heard a story that he wanted his young kid to decide, and his kid came up with those, and he seriously wanted those to be in it. But
I've never heard that part of the story, because the story is the story I've heard has always referred to it as something that came up off the cuff in a meeting.
Okay.
Let's see. So at the end of the day, George Lucas learned nothing from Kurosawa, despite being his biggest fan. I feel like I need to point out that that would be the most normal thing in the history of fans, who often adore things and never truly understand them. And I would count myself among those people. Is it time to talk about FF7 yet? It's not out where I am yet, so no. Illegal.
Banned. Any talk, banned. Thinking about it, banned.
Oh, I'm banned then. I'm sorry.
We're all banned.
Blocked, blocked, blocked. You're all blocked. None of you are free of sin.
Sending you all to jail.
Oh no, I'm not playing it.
It's true. There's laws in Japan that would prevent this. save the FF7 questions for the next episode then. Yeah, that's probably for the best. Well, you'll get lots of FF7 discussion next
week.
Yeah,
I mean, we're gonna fucking talk about it whether you like it or not, man.
Let's see. Yeah. We're probably gonna be a little short this episode. It'll depend. Since we went launched straight into news and then chat questions, we can do a brief rundown of what we've been playing.
Yes, I think this is the first time in 3 weeks that we've actually discussed that.
Yeah, we've been trying to keep it light, and that's always the longest section. So, but
not true. So. I mean, it's been 3 weeks since I actually stopped playing any of the games I was talking about previously and never had a chance to say anything else.
Okay. What else are you playing, then? Yeah.
Well, I ended up putting down Undertale at the second to last boss just because the battle board was not doing it for me. And I really didn't have any surprises left in the game itself for me because I already knew how it was ending. So, oh well.
Is it ending with you murdering more monsters?
No, I should have murdered more monsters on the way. That's why the last battles were so being so awful to me.
Or
I was kind of under
them. They're just trying to make their way in the world.
Kill no one, yep. Maybe. Consider.
Yeah, well,
the path of peace.
Time for that was a few hours too late.
No.
So, my brother wanted to buy me this one game for Christmas, but the cartridge, the physical edition, was delayed. He sent me a card to buy it digitally, so I did that. And so I've been playing through Unchained Echoes for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, hey, oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, yeah, that's the retro RPG.
Yep.
Say that so that narrows it down, but yeah, I've heard of that one.
One of the good ones.
Yep.
You say that as though it's...
So I can say that within 5 seconds of starting the game's prologue, I could already name the developer's number one favorite Super Nintendo RPG.
Which is...
It's like Chrono Trigger.
The very start of the game, the prologue, opens with the main character having a dream about a mother that turns out could not possibly have happened, but the dream itself is an almost pixel-perfect remake of Chrono Trigger, of Chrono waking up in bed.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. So by the end of the prologue, I can come up with a rough, probably top 5 list of favorite games that this person likes.
Let me guess. Let's see if we can guess these.
Okay,
Chrono Trigger is obviously one.
Yeah, the number one, yeah.
Final Fantasy VI.
That's number 2.
Final Fantasy IV?
Probably so, yes.
Okay, now we gotta think some more.
You're getting deeper into the Family Feud board.
Yeah, Mario RPG? No? No time mechanics in this one?
No, Sea of Stars did the Mario RPG thing, and yeah.
Okay,
only Sea of Stars knew about time tips.
Okay, what else could it be? What else could it be? I'm trying to remember based on what screenshots I've seen of that game.
There's one that's really obvious.
Is it all 16-bit RPGs we're thinking of here?
Nope. At least one or two of these are probably PlayStation era.
Okay.
Beyond the Beyond.
Dude.
No.
Dude, brother. Why?
Wild Arms?
What?
Wild Arms?
Not Wild Arms.
Legend of Dragoon?
Dude, what? No.
Nope.
Joe, you're fired.
Okay.
Just
goodbye.
Kidding,
man. Where are you
working? Joey Jojo.
Joey Jojo!
Not really, no. Nothing that wasn't definitely covered with 4 and 6.
Suikoden?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
I have not actually played Suikoden, so I can't really say, but there is some collect everybody to join your clan stuff later on, so probably Suikoden's in there.
Other Saga Frontier.
It's still the really big one.
Saga Frontier?
Nope.
No. Dave, you got any guesses?
No, my brain is fried, you motherfucker.
Alright, hold on. I need to pull up some screenshots on Chained Echoes. Figure this out.
You go to Mana?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about Unchained Echoes.
Okay, I'm not waiting for wheels much longer.
This has gone on too long.
Okay. Xenogears.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that one.
Nerds!
In both super armored combat and plot complexity. Mm-hmm. So, It's been getting weird.
Fighting robot. Mega Man. Wait, no.
Well, so I assume it's good? Question mark?
Oh, yeah.
I heard nothing but good things when it came out.
Very good.
Yes. Very good.
It's on my list. I mean, obviously that list is stupidly long at this point. I mean, I still got shit to play, like Seventh Dragon 1 and... or Seventh Dragon 2020 1 and 2.
Why did they call them that?
PlayStation Portable?
Yes.
For PlayStation Portable.
Yes, because I played and reviewed the third game.
And so, I believe also played at some point the first one.
I did, because it was kind of like this white whale of games. And
yeah.
It was kind of disappointing.
It took a while to hit its stride. As a franchise.
It never hit its stride.
But I've heard 2020 and Part 2 are better.
2020-2.
Dash whatever it's called. And,
yeah, they missed the boat on that title.
Yeah. Because the Seventh Dragon 3, which I played and reviewed, was very, very good, so.
But I love that they made the fourth game Seventh Dragon 3.
It was weird.
Deranged choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like personas.
Yeah, yeah. I like how if you say Persona 3, there are three games, there are like somewhere between three and six games you might be referring to.
I'd like to see them take another crack at that first game. I felt like that had some good ideas and it just didn't quite...
Seventh Dragon?
Yeah, the original.
Oh, it had some great ideas, it just didn't do anything with most of them.
Yeah.
That's why
almost no plot.
That's why you need a remake. Yeah. That's what it's for. But yeah. I was gonna say something about it. Yeah. So I assume that's been taking up most of your time. You've been playing anything else?
Also, trying out Atelier Wrestliana on the computer.
Don't know which one that is.
That's the gacha game.
Oh, gross.
So I'm mostly mining it for screenshots before I write a... Please don't bother with this review.
Please don't touch this. I've done it. You don't have to. You're free.
I mean, the sad thing is it actually seems to have a decent plot that I would have loved to see in an actual game.
Oh, yeah. Like, all the gacha games, like... pour a ton into like scenario design because the whole point requires you to care about the characters enough to be willing to spend ungodly sums of money to get them.
Yep.
Like, I'm so used to people saying, oh, but I love the plot of this gacha game, and it's like, yeah, that's why they can exploit you. You must free yourself from these chains.
Yeah, free your mind and the rest will follow.
Be your true mind.
But what if the chains have echoes and then become unchained?
Well, they've been unchained, so...
Unchained!
I mean,
hit the ground running! Oh, man.
Okay. Moving on. Wheels, what have you been playing?
I've been playing some more Sharon. Did some rescues on Sunday.
Oh, you're finally allowed to speak. Unmuzzled.
Sharon is fun. Wheels like that. It's very fun. Yeah, it's weird because it doesn't feel like that series has been... kind of gone for a long time, but it really has because Sharon 5 came out in...
Imitators have been around, yeah.
But Sharon 5 came out in 2010 on the DS, and it got ported to Vita, and I think it came to the US in 2016, and then that got ported and updated to the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a 14-year-old game about thereabouts, so it's nice to get a new one that feels like it's kind of tweaked the franchise and made it a bit more modern, and I don't want to say it's definitely easier than 5, but 5, as I've talked about on the show before, and you can go read about it in my review of Shenmue 5, had a dog shit, stupid RNG boss, final boss, that really pissed me off. In an otherwise
very I've noticed.
Yeah, something about it just summons other monsters randomly.
Yes. Yes.
And, yeah, you mentioned it before.
Yes, and I made liberal use of the Vita's cloud save so that I could test and see how fucking random it was. And it was
very,
very, and very to degrees of, wow, that, you know, I can almost beat this, to, wow, this is literally impossible unless you have, like, an inventory full of, like, screen clearing, like, monster killing items. Like, that's how impossible some of the runs were. It was ridiculous. And maybe they did something to that in the Switch port, I can't say. Our reviewer gave it the exact same score that I gave for the Vita version, so who the hell knows?
Presumably not.
But the final boss of this one was fine, and the second time I went through the main dungeon, there was no boss. It was just a story event, and I continued on. But there's lots of stuff to do after you, quote-unquote, roll credits. So it's a very good game. If you've liked any mystery dungeons, you owe it to yourself to play this. Especially if you've liked, say, the Pokemon mystery dungeons, because I don't understand you, but please play this instead. that's about it.
That's all you've been playing, I guess?
Playing some Destiny and shit. That's about it.
Oh, the stuff that I'll yell at you if you talk too much about. Got it.
Yes. Oh, there's nothing new to talk about there anyway.
Okay, so I'm going to briefly, before we continue with this, hit some of these questions Fireminer's been dropping in the chat. Do you spend more buying games on console or PC these days? Console.
Console. I rarely buy shit on PC. I hate playing games on PC.
Yeah, I need to have like extraordinary circumstances that cause me to play on PC usually.
What I mostly play on PC is like free-to-play multiplayer games. That's it.
So to continue on with this, the Epic versus Google lawsuit has made people talk about interoperability, the ability for users to leave platforms, remix their media, and reconfigure the device without corporate permission. A lot of it comes down to how much people can minimize their expense on games by looking for better deals on other platforms. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be why the consumer cares about it. Just how much effort do you put into hunting for good deals for games anyway? Not really, like... Usually, if I'm not willing to buy a game when it's new, lowering the price doesn't do that much for me. Like, it doesn't move the needle much for me at this point in my life.
In my case, if I actually have a balance on the eStore for the Switch, I'll just go through the entire bargain section. It's like, okay, this looks interesting. This looks interesting. Let's see how many games I can buy with 2,000 yen? Okay, let's see how this works.
And
the answer is quite a lot. I got some really weird things on my Switch now.
Mm-hmm. But pursuant to Fireminer's question, like the question is specifically about looking for deals on games you actually already intended to purchase.
Yeah.
If I care that much,
I'm getting it.
That's great. But I will just buy it at full price. I don't want to go out of my way.
Are you willing to go as far as buying Steam keys or using VPNs to buy at a different region's pricing? Nope, don't care.
Nope, don't like.
My time is worth more than that to me.
Well, okay, so right now, I am spending more on console games because I just, pre-ordered a $70 game, and we know which one that is. Late last year, I was spending a lot of money on PC games because of I had the new graphics card, that I got last year, and then all the Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals and holiday deals on Steam and all the sales and then all the stuff on Epic Games. As for deal hunting, yeah, sometimes I'll check kingwin.net just to see if a specific game is cheaper, but sometimes the games are more expensive on there, actually. So, and it's not, you can't really get console games on there for less than what they'd normally be. So, and like you said, though, it's for games that I wanted anyways, and it's like, okay, sometimes I'll just pay a couple extra bucks and just get it from Steam if I have to.
Yeah, like, I feel like, because I used to sort of keep tabs on Steam sales at least a little bit, but at this point it's like, it just became like a situation where it's like, I'm accumulating things, and I have no desire to play half of these.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, this is cheap, but like, I was no more compelled to play it now that, like, just because I'd bought it when it was cheap. Like, I don't need to, if I want it, like, the best way I can spend money at this point is to buy it when I actually want it, instead of buying it in case I'll want it someday.
Yeah, by the time you're ready to actually play it, it's going to be even cheaper anyways. So.
Yeah, or if you're, like, gearing up to play it, you can sort of, like, chart, okay, is there likely to be a sale sometime in the next month? Because that's, like, Steam or whatever has, like, a sale every month.
Yeah. I mean, I have, like, 500 games on Steam, and I used to do that every time there was a sale. I'd be like, oh, that's cheap, and I have so many games here I never even played, not even once. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like,
I've got tons of stuff that I'm like, I don't even know how I got this.
Right,
where did this
remember.
Come from? Did I buy this? Did someone send it to me as a joke?
How much does it cost? I don't even know. What did I pay? So, well, on that topic, though, I just got on the computer to talk to you guys. I just happened to open the Epic Games Store. I do that just to see what the free game is for the current month or whatever. Actually, currently, it's Super Meat Boy Forever, which was okay. But I noticed a game called Tiny Thor was on sale for like half off. And I'm like, oh, wait, I remember that. I remember seeing trailers for that on Steam. And on Steam, it was $20. But then on here, it was like $8. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'll just, you know,
I'd rather spend $8.
I'll just grab that now. That was, so sometimes I just check the stores just to see what's there, and I'll see something that I want. But for the most part, yeah, like, if there's a game I really want, like Rebirth, I'll pay the $70, whatever. But if there's a game I'm not too interested in, then I have no problem waiting till it's 15 or 20 or whatever.
Yeah, I do keep people. I do have people in my orbit that, like, when I'm looking for something that is a PC game, like, I can just sort of ask them, like, hey, is there any place that's doing a decent deal on it? And then I get at least the option of, like, oh, at least I'm not the one who has to keep track of, like, the 9 million shady deal sites that sell, like, keys from, like, the Netherlands or whatever.
You just go to deals.gg and it has all the
I'll take your word.
And the legit sites.
I'll take your word.
On rare occasions, I am buying a PC game. That's where I do so, because I don't play very many PC games, so I don't want to pay very much for it, because it's most likely going to get little use.
Yeah, so I'm in this phase right now where, like, what I want to do is, if there's a game that's digital only, then I'll get it on PC, right? Whereas if a physical copy is available, then I'd prefer to get it on console, because I go through a phase where I really just want to play nothing but PC games, especially since I got the Steam Deck and I can play it on PC and Deck. But now it's like, man, my physical collection is really looking skimpy these days, so I want to try to get physical games when possible. So that's kind of my plan going forward. Yeah, I got a really good deal on Alan Wake 2 back in November, and that was Epic Games Store exclusive on PC. But also, it was digital only anyway, so it was like, all right, yeah, let's just grab that on here. Oh.
Can any online game marketplace ever hope to take the lead from Steam? The lock-in is too great, and the kind of person who cares significantly about this is too radioactive. Like, it's too little too late to actually take the crown. We know what happened to Epic Games Store and EA Origin. I think, like, Epic Store is still running. I don't know if EA Origin actually still exists as a store at this point.
Like, phase, though.
Yeah. Go ahead, keep chugging.
It's just the EA app at this point. You can still buy games on there, though.
Okay, fair enough.
But you have to. If you have Game Pass PC and you want to play the EA games, then you have to get their stupid app, and whether you want it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's part of what causes them to be willing to let their games onto Game Pass, but yeah.
Yeah, so... But Epic Game Store seems to be doing just fine from what I can tell. I mean, you have to get it if you want to do any development in Unreal Engine, and I think you need it to play Fortnite on PC as well.
You do.
So, yeah. I would say it's in second place and it's not going anywhere. Yeah.
Goggle, keep chugging along like it always has.
Yes.
Just how many people use Fanatical or Humble Bundle. No one uses those for anything other than getting Steam keys. You can tell that, like, eventually the ease of getting Steam keys from Humble created a frustration within Valve, because it used to be that when you could just click a button and your linked Humble account would just automatically redeem Steam keys for you, and then they added the extra step of, like, oh, third-party sites can't redeem keys. You have to... They can spit out a key that you can redeem yourself, but they wanted to create that extra bit of friction so you'd be less likely to start buying things off of other stores. It's one of those things that, like... Yeah, the lock-in's too big. There's not enough reason. Like, you can't... Like, what feature set could you give that would induce the desire to play games, to get things from something other than Steam on the consumer's end? Like, for developers, you can introduce all sorts of incentives to put their games specifically on the Epic Games Store, but, like, the audience that buys full price games on Steam are deranged enough that they responded to that by, like, screaming fie and damnation and screaming about how they were going to boycott games that weren't on Steam. So there's really no way to unmoor that audience other than if Steam somehow goes kaput, which is not going to happen. If you're not using Steam, you probably don't buy PC games. So, vicious cycle. There's not, like, the short of finding some vast untapped audience of people who want to buy premium PC games that, for whatever reason, don't use Steam, there's nothing to be done for that.
Yeah. Well, when I was doing my whole review for the Steam Deck and then another one for the Deck OLED, it was like, I even said in the video, I'm like, you know what? What's cool about Steam Deck is, even if you don't have a Steam account, even if you don't even play video games, like, you could just keep it in desktop mode and just use it as a portable Linux system. You know, and I wondered about that. I wondered is there anyone out there who doesn't use Steam but still ended up buying a Steam Deck and just, you know, uses it for other things or emulation and stuff, you know? I thought that was interesting to think
because
about.
Linux heads are deranged, I could see there being someone who does that.
Hey.
Yeah, you're deranged too, Wheels. I know. Okay, so fine. Am I. It's fine. But yeah, because Linux heads are deranged, it wouldn't surprise me if someone did that, but I feel like that person would largely run out of decent use cases because it's still designed for use with a controller.
Yeah.
Like, eventually you would have to start festooning it with, USB hubs and keyboard and mouse, and, like, at that point you might as well not have bothered. But yeah, I mean, you could, but you're also using SteamOS, which is like a weird variant Linux that has its own quirks. Let's see. Speaking of interoperability, we will never get away from x86, will we? No. Talk
What's
to any risk
with- x86.
Well, that's where the question goes. Talk to any RISC-V fanboy and they will tell you that it's worth it exchanging silicon dependency / complexity in hardware for software dependency / complexity in programming. The answer is that, like, you need to make... It can't just be good enough. It can't just be better in a vacuum. We can't just look at something and be like, this. If we look at the cost benefit of x86 versus a risk-based system. If we look at the cost benefit between the two, on the basis that, like, if all else is equal, if we just look at them as raw products, that's not that. There's no real world. You need to look at the real world where, like, people use x86 because the programs they need to use are on x86. Like, that's the true software dependency that we care about. Like, the machine, the box that you get to run programs is only as necessary as the programs that it runs. So, like, in that sense, you can see how Apple is at liberty to, like, be like, oh, we're changing processor architectures. Now everything's going to be on our, like, internally developed ARM branch. And they can get away with that because people buying Apple products are buying them for Apple software. If you try to do that by saying, like, we're moving all of our games to, like, a risk, to only be compatible with, like, a RISC-V architecture or whatever, you're not going to move the needle of amount of people who are willing to jump from x86, where all of their programs currently work, where Windows currently works, which is what runs all of their other programs. Like, the amount of people who want to deal with the pain in the ass that is most Linux distros is not—it's not a huge number, which is why we still are. I believe we're on year of the Linux desktop 25.
Like, Linux is awesome if you're a programmer or work in, like, IT or DevOps.
It is not built for the kind of person who doesn't already know how a computer works.
Yeah. Yeah, like. Yeah, I've dabbled in Linux here and there, mostly Ubuntu and Mint, and it's like, I like that there are open source equivalents, free open source equivalents to, you know, Microsoft Word and stuff like that. So all of those basic programs you'd expect to be there are there, but then I use a program called Reaper to record music. That's Windows only, I believe. I use Bias FX 2 for guitar effects and, you know, amp modeling and all that, and that's exclusive to Windows. And then there were a whole bunch of games that, yeah, Proton may run them, but ultimately I've always found myself back on Windows because that's where I can play my games and record music and do all that stuff.
If you have a computer for games, you should not be using Linux unless it's a dual boot.
Right. And that's what I did. I had a dual boot system for a while, but, you know, I would play around with stuff in Ubuntu just to check it out, and it was, you know, there was a novelty to it the first time I installed it, but beyond that, it's like, nah, I need Windows, like it or not. And just one comment on Apple is that there are people who will buy any product with that Apple logo on it, as evidenced by the new Vision Pro, you know.
I mean, not a lot of people seem to be biting on that, but...
Oh, okay. But... I'm surprised anybody is, but I'm not surprised because I just said some Apple users are like, oh, I'll buy that. I don't know what it does, but it's Apple. I want it, you know.
Yeah, but there's deranged people in all fields.
If I were to buy an Apple computer, it would just be so I could use, like, GarageBand, and that's about it. Yeah, which I can already use on my iPhone anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And no, but then I'm disappointed with the Chromebook because it's like, okay, yeah, it runs Google apps just fine, but you can run those apps on any device because they're all web-based and you can just go to the Google website to run Docs and Gmail and all that. So it's like, oh yeah, it's great that this Chromebook can run those, but what can't? And meanwhile, the Chromebook can't do anything else that I want it to do, so now it just collects dust. So... Anyways.
Let's see. Okay. But yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, ultimately, any attempt to dislodge existing hardware paradigms is going to run into... You need to not just be better in a vacuum. You need to be better than what is currently available, or to do something that currently available tech cannot. And the arguments... for non-x86 taking over always sort of have to rely on, like, somehow all the software is available. And it's just like, that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened, and it won't.
Yeah, and poor Wheels, when I was trying to get, like, wine to work, and I'm like, the fuck is a repository? The fuck is a dependency? Oh, what does it want from me? You know?
It wants you to uninstall Linux and reinstall Windows and be on your right.
That's what I did.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, yeah, whatever pie in the sky thing, you philosophical reason that you'd prefer something else to take over, it has to be better than what's there, not better than what it, not theoretically better someday.
Right.
I played Terminator Dark Fate Defiance. It's fine for what it is, and the developer definitely played it safe. Campaign can definitely use some more variety. It's not Company of Heroes for sure. They need better pathfinding engine. It baffles me that pathfinding and other automatic unit functions are that stagnant in the year 2024. Must be one of the effects of the death of the RTS. Like, yeah, like I feel like the big issue you're running into is that anyone making an RTS at this stage is trying to convince a publisher. Like, any RTS you've seen that, like, especially with a name attached to it, like Terminator, is trying to convince publishers these can still sell. You can buy these. You can sell these to people. And so you kind of have to play it safe, and you kind of have to run with, you know, pathfinding that will get the job done, as opposed to being able to spend a lot of time and money innovating on the core mechanics. It's rough. It's rough out there for an RTS developer. Sinza Solar Empire 2 is still stuck on the Epic Games Store, BTW. Yeah, I would imagine that'll probably be the case for a little while longer.
Yeah, I played the first one, and it was okay, but that was another instance of I don't really feel compelled to buy the second one, regardless of which platform it's on, you know? But then, you know, maybe something else I'd pick up if it was on sale at a real steep... Let me take a look at that real quick. This came out really. Oh, this came out October 2022. Yeah, I'm surprised that still has exclusivity.
Usually, it's a 1 year exclusivity window.
Yeah, that's a little weird. And it's $40, but it's like this is something where. Yeah, you know what? If it was like 20, I might grab it, and I wouldn't care that it's Epic or Steam or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if I'd want to grab this at all, to be honest with you. Okay. That's neat. Alright.
More quick ones. The Apple Vision Pro was for schools and research institutes. Remember the eMac? I'll believe that when I see it being mass adopted. I can't even imagine being, at least in the US, any school district that could afford those. Like, I do some work with schools in my job, and like, The most generous they can be is lending out Chromebooks, and there's all sorts of shit around that, like, for a lot of the districts that I've seen. But, yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, I can't imagine a school being able to trust children around a $3,500 headset. I assume possibly the meaning is, like, universities, and I can't imagine a college student that could afford that. There's just like the comparison brought up is Emacs, and Emac is a general purpose computer that like a normal human being could use. So thank you. But yeah, I just like I feel like they've made a very poor argument for that use case if that's their intention. Let's see. Given all the feel-good stories about how Nintendo Japan treats its employees, do we know how many contractors they use? No idea. If it's anything like the U.S. side, quite a few. Everyone with a relative in Japan has heard once or twice about how recruitment companies can be. It hasn't been 2 years since the Nintendo of America and Ashton Carter story broke. A two-tier employment system can be very dangerous towards workers' bargaining power. I mean, yeah, that's why companies love
contract work, because it's like you don't even get the bad press from a layoff. You just didn't. Oh, they just didn't renew their contract. That work was done.
Yeah, they didn't actually work for us. They weren't actually an employee. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like I you do when all that
story
the
story broke. Yeah,
yeah, you do all the employees. You do all the employee work. You just keep getting renewed and renewed until, for whatever reason, they say, "Oh no, we won't be renewing your contract. See ya. Don't no severance, nothing. Had to handle all of your own taxes. All this absurd bullshit." Yeah.
I worked for a temp agency at one point, and that's just it. It was a two-tiered system, so the guy sitting next to me did the same job, worked the same hours, and made $6 more an hour than I did. And they told us, "Oh yeah, you'll become a permanent employee in 90 days. Don't worry about it." And it's like, well, 7 months later, they were like, "Yeah, okay, I guess we'll offer you a job now." And
yeah,
I was
they
like,
eventually
struggling to pay my bills and stuff, and it was horrible. Yeah,
they eventually your best luck. If you're lucky, you eventually entrench yourself to the point where they determine that training someone else to do your job would be more painful than just hiring you properly. If you're unlucky, they just keep giving you a series of contracts until they finally decide that they're done. It's 100% like contract work is it's some heinous bullshit that everyone's got a different kind of story and about, but like game development's no different. Tons of it. And none of your favorite companies are free. What else was I gonna say about this though? I'm not aware of any like public acknowledgement of how many employees are under contract, or contract workers for any of the major companies. I would imagine is a substantial number. Lately, you've been talking a lot about how the modern AAA industry is unsustainable and the developers and publishers alike should really rethink their approach to 4K graphics. Which other things related to art is no longer sustainable? What comes to mind is hand-drawn mecha anime. Oh god, that one makes me sad. But yeah, there's not a lot of space for that unless you've got unusually generous funding. 2D art in general has become difficult to get people, just because there's fewer people that do like proper 2D animation in both games and outside it, unless you pay starvation wages.
Pew, Rebirth is not out till tomorrow.
I said it unlocked at midnight, but you didn't buy a digital copy.
Yeah, I ain't buying no digital.
Guardian. Yeah, okay.
I will own this forever.
Or until the console breaks and then they make me buy a remaster on a new console. Who knows? Well, on that topic, though, so we do talk about that a lot, but actually I just had a conversation today, just my brother was here, and what I would say is that 4K graphics in itself is not unsustainable, but I think part of what's driving up the cost and development times is the fact that does everything have to be open world? Does everything have to be 30, 40, 50 hours long?
The reason they're open world is that you get 4K? So I'm going to put this down there. Okay. Being open world gets you a lot more mileage out of a smaller set of art assets.
Okay.
That's you fair. Get like because like you make these really high quality art assets and this like these models, and then you run back and forth through them over and over.
Yeah. Also, Tears of the Kingdom, not 4K, looks better artistically than most of the 4K games that came out last year. I'm sorry.
Honestly, I'm fine with them looking worse. I don't mind.
I don't care.
I am fine with games looking worse. This is unsustainable, and it's going to get more unsustainable because like Microsoft at least has already talked about how we're going to keep making consoles, and it's going to be the most powerful goddamn console you've ever seen. And
meanwhile,
like
the best-selling games of all time, none of them are like
Well, my point
super
though was just
graphics department.
My point is even all right. So at 4K resolution, though, what if we kind of went back to where we were on PS3 and Xbox 360? What if we went back to these like 8 or 10 hour linear action games? Do you think that would bring down costs and development times on 4K titles? No.
No. Okay. Look how much Spider-Man costs. I know that's open.
That's
world.
An open world game.
I know it's open world, but. In terms of just if you broke that out and only had like the story missions, I guarantee you it would still be extremely expensive.
You're probably still looking at a like $100 million game.
Yeah.
Because like I harp on 4K because it's one of those things that like is. Indicative of the when I describe unsustainable, it is like logarithmically more expensive to keep making art assets at this higher and higher fidelity that is less and less observable. Again, we harp on this because the Insomniac leak was very instructive when they talk about how Spider-Man 2 cost like $300 million to make, and the internal documentation is. Did anyone notice that that cost like four times as much as like Miles Morales?
I certainly didn't.
I
don't really think it looked that much better.
Honestly, if you told me, if you rearranged them and said which one came out first, I would not be able to tell. Yeah. You were saying?
No, it just depends. No, I think it just depends on the game itself. Yeah, I mean, some games, sometimes the sequels do look noticeably better, sometimes they don't. But I thought those two games used the same graphics engine, though, although I know...
I mean,
Miles
most
Morales
games
was a
use similar engines.
Game. Okay. All right. No, yeah. That's the thing. I'm surprised by that number, and yeah, I haven't played Spider-Man 2, so I can't comment too much on it, but actually, just as an example, though, I did load up the Rebirth demo, and at first I was like, this looks just like the remake, and it's
good.
Like, well, yeah, it does, because you, good. It's like, you know, compared to the original PS4 version of FF7 remake, sure, it's going to look better, but I would expect it would look the same as the PS5 version. It's the same graphics engine. There's nothing wrong with that either. But then again, that's an instance of, well, gee, did this really have to be a PS5 exclusive? This couldn't run on PS4. It looks like a PS4.
Sony, sure. I think the bigger issue for that one, like if we ignore that Sony likely would have requested it, if we look at just the game itself, the large open environments likely would have made the PS4 choke a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, like broadly speaking, these. The issue we've run into is just that, like, when you were talking about, like, breaking it out into linear games, like, a lot of the big expenditure that for something like, again, to use Spider-Man 2 as an example, the opening, this gigantic, bespoke set piece where the Sandman is, like, fucking obliterating half of the city, like, that entire set piece, you break that out, and you don't have the giant open world to set it in. So now you have this giant set that you're making for this one scene. You still had to make the set. Uh-huh. And you still have this giant bespoke scene. So you've saved very little money by doing this. You've just decreased the amount of content. The increase, the proliferation of busy work content is supposed to make the games feel more like a better value when they have to spend so much more money on them and are charging more for them. Mm-hmm. And we could argue that's a false value, that they are generally making their games worse. But put simply, the open world proposition is as much a band-aid for the problems inherent to the scope of the games themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, another one from Fireminer. 100% hand-drawn mech are so expensive and time-consuming in an age where anime production can face multiple delays. The best you can hope for is a mix of hand-drawn CG animation. Some of the hand-drawn stuff are just traced over the 3D models. Yeah, they're complex to actually do, because, you know, you're drawing something that is weird and doesn't always move or look like a person, and doesn't really look like anything else that you would normally be used to drawing, and now you have to find ways that it moves from different angles. It's time consuming and expensive, and I love it, but I can understand why it's going away, even though it makes me sad.
Did you already read Pew's comment about Starfield?
Look at the little bit of assets that Starfield uses, and it was quote unquote open world. Rude, but let's see. Last time you talked about Sony's and Microsoft's potential in the handheld market. Am I the only person who thinks that it's a shame that Microsoft never made a handheld with the UI of Windows 8.1? It seems like what it was built for, that and phones. Just feels right on a touchscreen, and the biggest weakness of those $1,000 handheld PCs is Windows 10 and 11 is not great for touchscreens, and their own front ends are worse compared to SteamOS, hence why their owners had to install Steam Deck's suite of software to their expensive handheld Windows. Yeah, it's a fucking, like, the issue, of course, being that for the same reason that Windows 8's entire UI was immediately abandoned for fair reasons. If you want the interoperability, the whole OS kind of has to work on one UI. But the phone UI on desktop is a miserable nightmare. And so it's more, since productivity is more important on the desktop UI, that's the one that wins that fight every time.
Yeah,
and it's kind of a shame.
I was just gonna say, if Microsoft were to release their own first party, you know, handheld system, and it let you actually download, you know, Game Pass titles instead of not just streaming, that is something I would be interested in, definitely. You can't play those games on Steam Deck, not without some major finagling, but it's like, yeah, I feel like there are enough devices that can stream Game Pass at this point where any kind of streaming device would be pointless. But if it was actually allowed for you to natively download the games you own on Windows Store or the PC Game Pass titles, then that's something I might want. Yeah.
Windows making a handheld-centric OS for these devices sounds like a good way for a software company to control the supply. I'm sure that there's been all sorts of proposals within Microsoft, but you also end up running with the issue of, like, giant company that doesn't want to commit fully to a market that it can't actually, like, because they do these things every so often, and they sound like they make sense on paper. You get things like the Zune or the Surface or all these other things that, like, sometimes are even good devices, but they just don't make much of a splash, and inevitably, once they don't make enough of a splash at the start, they slowly get sundowned and killed. I feel like there's probably all sorts of internal proposals for like phone UI wrappers for Windows and how to make that work with Windows 11 and that sort of thing. And ultimately, they just keep not being a high enough priority with the movers and shakers to end up seeing the light of day. I'm sure there's all sorts of attempts at that internally. Didn't Harada of Tekken fame recently make a Twitter post about how expensive it is to make Tekken 8, and if the fans wanted it to get updates? I don't think he was quite that overt about it. Harada did discuss the development of Tekken 8, and just Tekken in general, in a Twitter post recently. And I want to bring that up because it was actually quite interesting.
Okay.
It's a couple of days ago, though, so I'm going to have to dig back through this.
The only other thing on, like, 4K graphics and all that is just that, obviously, I like better graphics, but I don't demand it. I don't require it. So I'm wondering how much of the audience is actually demanding these insanely high graphic titles, you know, like, well, like, but what would what would the repercussions really be if they just said, you know, hey, it's not 4K? Like, I don't know.
There's, I do feel that, like, partially AAA devs have locked themselves into this cycle where, like, the best looking game is, like, a core distinguishing feature. If they let go of that arms race, the there's no longer as many distinguishing features between, like, immediately visible in marketing distinguishing features between AAA and indie. And so you end up with, like, AAA seeks this seeks these like higher resolutions, this like these tech specs you can put on a sheet that causes certain kinds of people to lose their minds, but the it's because you want to price certain, you want to price out competition. But yeah, okay, so I found Harada's commentary on games. So he saw someone, he saw a fighting game anniversary account that was basically like, it's one of those those accounts that like tweets out, hey, it's been X number of years since Y came out on this day. So he brings up this fighting game anniversaries account brought up that 19 years ago on February 24th, in February 24th, 2005, Tekken 5 was released on the PlayStation 2 in North America. And so Harada went on this saying, and I'm gonna quote him, "Tekken, grr, I'm getting old. At that time, we were developing software by saying that we would put anything we could think of on a disc. We did not have a plan from the beginning, but rather developed software as we thought of it along the way. It was decided from the beginning to include Starblade as an extra. The Devil Within mode and the Tekken 1, 2, and 3 arcade emulation modes were developed on the spur of the moment. At the time, no one scolded us for such a way of proceeding, because we were all immature. Porting and development was going on at a much faster pace, with much lower labor costs, us and others too. Now it is completely different. Everything has become huge. All costs have skyrocketed, and it takes a lot longer. As games have become a major industry, many stakeholders have emerged. There are more and more self-proclaimed game industry people and executives who are not creators, do not even have development experience, and do not directly face the voices from the fan community. Come to think of it, it seems like every year there are more and more people who, when I try to do something with an idea, tell me, don't do it just because of an idea or passion. I've done a lot of things with an idea, and that's why we have the foundation we have today, but I guess people who don't have experience in making things don't understand that. Well, that's how mature this field has become. Nevertheless, no matter how well planned and smart you are, no one can guarantee that the game will be a success until the very end. It's the only thing that hasn't changed much. So, yeah, just him sort of waxing about, like, how, you know, like, as money came into the industry, as the industry became the realm of people, not people who had any sort of passion for games or even computers, but became infested by people who had business degrees, the way that games have been made has pushed towards it's surprisingly candid, you know, because it's basically just saying, like, yeah, people are much more prone to telling me, don't do something just because it sounds cool. And I can't imagine telling someone who makes Tekken, don't do something just because it sounds cool. A series fully built upon the notion of, I'm doing this because it's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's just the creative types have always been beholden to the business types. You know, wherever somebody tries to do something creative, some business person is going to try to exploit them or make money for themselves out of it, unfortunately. But these things cost money, and you need somebody to bankroll the whole project.
So. Inevitably, someone with too much money from producing something terrible, it's going to come in and make us all very sad eventually. Let's see. Okay. Why are Japanese corporations so stingy even with their cash cows? Bandai Namco never put out a lot of money for the licensed games, even for something as big as Dragon Ball. Now Godzilla fans are digging up the records of Toho's many idiotic decisions that are only aimed at cost cutting. I feel like Bamco in particular has a pattern of when something is already a success, you can kind of cut costs on it because the people who care about it will buy it regardless of its quality.
Yes.
And they've found the limits of that to some extent with that Jujutsu Kaisen game that became like the most refunded game on Steam almost immediately.
Oh. Really? Aw, that's sad. I took one look at it and I said, that just looks like generic anime game. And I see people, characters flying around, and I'm like, they don't fly on the show. What the? Nobody can fly on that show.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, like, I guarantee you those poor devs did not get a lot of time and money. No. But yeah, so like you see that all the time though. Like Dragon Ball Super, when it started airing, was infamously like just heinously ugly. Because, you know, why, if you spend like double the amount on a Dragon Ball Super episode that early when the brand was super hot, how many more people do you actually bring in? And the conclusion that they'd come to was, hey, you don't bring in that many more people, so spend less on it. Spend more on things that you can't guarantee someone will watch. And I understand it, but I also feel like they take it too far. Oh yeah, Microsoft stopped making mouses and keyboards. I miss their ergonomic keyboards and IntelliMouse. I do still play at 1080p, just bought a 24-inch high refresh rate 1080p PC monitor so that I can have 1-to-1 scaling. 48-inch is 1-to-1 for 4K, and 48-inch is too big for my room. I don't blame you. That sounds like an enormous computer monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have a 27-inch 4K monitor, and it looks fine to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just he's saying that he prefers 1-to-1 scaling, so...
That's fine.
But okay. Yeah. Oh man, now I'm imagining like the someone in the year 2035 purchasing a 1-to-1 scaling 8K monitor. They can run 4 video games on it.
But, there is no 8K content, is there?
I can't even imagine what that would look like. But yeah, I don't know of anything that. Produce. I don't know of anything that's mastered in 8K. Presumably there's high quality enough sources that you could find some, but you know, mastering like video in 8K, I can't imagine anyone's really doing that yet.
No.
Like games designed to engineered to run in 8K, I don't think anything's even close to doing that yet. Yeah, like I said, maybe in 2035.
Yeah, the thing is, the Series X was marketed as going up to 8K, and I remember thinking, like, but you could only do 30 FPS at 4K. I don't see that happening. And again, now I don't want 8K, to be honest with you. If it means that games are going to take even longer to make, and they're going to go up to $80 or $90 each, then no, then I don't want 4K, 8K, you know?
Yeah, I feel like... You know, there are people who will prefer. There are people who will prefer 4K, and like I won't get it, but I'll kind of understand it. If you start talking about how you need 8K, I'm going to tell you that you can fuck off. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, and then like, so Ori and the Will of the Wisps is, as far as I know, is the only Series X or PS5 game that can go above 4K. Like it's supposed to be super sampled to 6K. At 60 FPS, but you're not going to notice that though, because there are no 6K TVs or monitors, right? So I don't know.
Theoretically, the super sampling might make it smoother on a 4K device, just in case you were worried that Ori didn't look pretty enough.
I was going to say that's the one game that can do it, and it's the one game that doesn't really need it at all. Yeah,
I can't imagine a use case for that, but I mean, more power to him for trying it. Reminds me of how like there was the original Xbox 360 did not launch with 1080p support, but there is a launch Xbox 360 game that runs in 1080p. There was just no way to actually run it that way at the time. It is the Xbox 360 port of Quake 2 for some reason.
Huh.
Quake sucks. Well,
even Quake 3?
I didn't play that one.
You didn't play...
I expect that to be what broke wheels tonight.
I didn't mean
did you
either.
Play Unreal Tournament?
Yes.
All versions?
All versions.
Several of them. I don't know.
That was a joke.
Don't worry about it.
This is a joke for two people.
Yeah, and both of them are in this call.
Yes.
All right.
But, yeah.
I thought you said this was going to be a short episode. I'm getting tired.
Sure yeah, we're just we're probably going to close out after this one.
But don't you want to hear about what I've been playing?
Literally shivering.
Sorry.
Yeah, we'll hit this last question, which is more of a comment, but it's fine. I've got a few things to say about it. Mamoru Nagano's Gothic Maid is produced and shown at cinemas at 12K, and that is why that movie still hasn't got a home release. Mamoru Nagano is a madman, just to make it clear. Yeah, I mean, I've heard horror stories about okay, so just for the record, Mamoru Nagano is a artist. It's probably his most well known to a certain set in English would be the Five Star Stories of a robo manga. He's, by all accounts, a prickly sort of guy, and allegedly came into many arguments working with other very prickly sort of guy, Yoshiyuki Tomino, the creator of Gundam, when they worked together on Heavy Metal L Game. He is 100% the kind of guy who would have, who would demand that something be made at 12K and would then just refuse to let it be seen any other way.
Yeah, that came out in 2012. Alright.
genuinely, a unique man. None could even imagine none could even imagine this, but like a man that is by all accounts extremely protective of Five Star Stories, which Gothic Maid ties into. There's a long running unconfirmed rumor in Super Robot Wars fandom that he has specifically refused to let Five Star Stories into it, on the basis of having various issues with crossing it over with other shows and with the potential for you to lose in that context.
Yeah, Gothic Maid, a film you've never heard of and literally can't watch. Okay.
RIP.
Oh, hold on. Okay. No, I'm on Reddit, but that's where I just got that quote from. But then somebody said, oh, he did it in 4K, only wants it to be seen in 4K. And then somebody said, no, actually, it was filmed in 12K with 1.5 terabyte of data in total. That's why it hasn't been released on Blu-ray, because
you literally couldn't fit it.
We do not have that capacity. We don't even have 8K Blu-ray discs yet. And So this person is claiming the theater screenings are down converted to 4K. Okay.
To put that into perspective, a 12K film at 1.5 terabytes is a 70-minute film.
Yeah.
This is truly the realm of those who have left practical concerns behind. But that's been horrifying. Fireminer says people who say Tomino is bad just haven't met Nagano, even back when he was still a new guy at Sunrise after making Elgai, and people had talked badly about him. Yeah, like he seems like a guy that I've seen some Five Star Stories content that I even kind of like, but he seems 100% like the kind of creator I would never want to know. Like, the less I know about this man, the better. Occasionally, I'll look at the pretty robots. Tamino, for all his faults, is a deeply sincere and heartfelt man who has many interesting things to say. Mostly, I would say Nagano has many interesting things to draw and fewer interesting things to say. I think that's probably a good time to wrap it up because I'm very tired. Happy FF7 Rebirth mess to all. First we'll hear from Gaijin about where I can purchase Tales of the Princesses.
I'm not in the best condition right now. I've just been...
Okay, do you want me to run through things real quick?
Bring over here.
Yeah, you sound like you're a little sick. You want me to run through the plug for you, and you can
go ahead,
correct
please.
Me if anything's wrong?
Sure.
Since Gaijin is a little indisposed, we will just say that Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, in case you have ever wanted to track the joys and dramas of a D&D game with people who aren't going to be revealed to be horrible monsters at some point, unless the narrative calls for it, but I kind of doubt it. You can get the thrills of an actual play experience, minus the nightmares of the kinds of people who produce such things. And you can support an indie author while you're doing it by going to Amazon.com and looking up Princesses of the Pizza Parlor by Michael Yarimizu, YARIMIZU, because Googling Michael Baker will get you nothing. yes. Well, actually, it'll get you everything, which is basically getting nothing at this stage.
That would be the problem, yes.
But, that's available on Kindle Unlimited, and in charming wood-pulped format. You'll be able to... It's very cheap any way you look at it, but, you know, whatever your preference, there's something to suit your needs. I believe there's... How many short stories are we at this point? I want to know that I've got the number right.
12 episodes, 4 short stories, and a paralogue, which is not short. So, 17 ebooks.
Yeah, 17 ebooks, 4 paperbacks. More on the way. Give that a look. Support indie authors and write a nice review when you're done. I'm sure you'll have many nice things to say.
Cheap.
Yeah, the paperbacks are always like complete. It is completely impossible to determine what causes the Amazon robot to discount things, but you might as well like make Amazon suffer while you do it.
Please, because we have checked and I still get the same royalties.
Yeah, so you don't even have to feel bad. It's only Amazon that you're hurting. And wow. That's honestly noble at this stage. You're doing a good deed. Give that a look. Michael Yarimizu, YARIMIZU. Joe, tell them what they can see if they come watch you on the YouTube or the Twitch.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitch and YouTube, Smoke and Joe Gamer. And let's see, recently, well, I jumped back into Street Fighter 6 today to check out the new guy, Ed, and he's really cool. I was also able to go into World Tour mode and make him become my master, and then I unlocked some extra costumes too for Jewelry and Cammy, so I got their original costumes. So I was playing that. I was playing some classic Sonic games. I was doing Sonic 3 and Knuckles and kept dying, but I thought it was entertaining. And then just today I just streamed the FF7 remake scenario with Yuffie, so I wanted to try to clear that before starting Rebirth. I don't know if I will succeed in that goal.
Expect you to have seen it, but you know, it'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, it takes place like in the middle of the game, like at the point where Cloud falls and meets Aerith, and then Tifa goes over to that creep's mansion or whatever.
Yeah, it's in the Walmart market, that sort of stuff.
So, yeah, so you can check that out. I tend to do live streams on Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday if I feel like it. Sometimes I start early, sometimes not. So anytime between 6 and 10 is usually when I would stream whatever I feel like. And the plan for March is to do some Mega Man games, but that might, you know, drive me insane. So we'll see how well that goes.
Yeah. Play Mega Man Legends.
No, not that one.
I love Mega Man Legends. That's a good one.
I don't have that one.
Play Battle Network.
Maybe.
Play Battle Network 2.
We'll see. I was going to do TurboGrafx Tuesdays, but that just has not panned out because the first episode got deleted before I could export it, and the second episode didn't go very well, and nobody watched it anyways. So I might try to try to do that again at some point, but for now I'm just doing Sega Saturdays and Mega Man March is the plan.
Mega March. Major, Minor, it's Majestic March. Wait, no. Okay, and yeah, that's visible from twitch.tv/smokeandjoegamer and YouTube at same.
And you can follow me on Mastodon, but I know nobody uses that, so I guess it's kind of moot.
Wheels uses that, but no one else.
Yes, I use that, but I've abandoned Threads. So it's Mastodon and Blue Sky.
Good old Bisky. And let's see, otherwise you can catch this very podcast by going, if you'd like to ask us questions, normally we are on Thursday nights at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, that is Thursday going into Friday, but this week we were on Wednesday going into Thursday because, we did not want to counter-program ourselves starting FF7 Rebirth, so... but we will be back to our usual night next week. But
are we doing
otherwise,
shenanigans on Sunday or no?
We will be doing shenanigans, I believe.
Are we going to play Street Fighter 6?
We can TBD. Probably play some of that.
Okay.
TBD, it'll be either that or Rebirth, depending upon how sucked in any of us are.
All right.
But, yeah. Sunday night shenanigans are... Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. If you want to ask us questions, you can catch us, if you catch Wheels, the stream at twitch.tv/askwheels, you can ask us questions in the comment section, like dear friend, in the chat, like dear friend Fireminer. You can also ask us questions in the comments section under this very episode on rpgamer.com, or you can ask us questions by joining the RP Gamer Discord. You can get an invite to that by going to the community tab of RP Gamer, and that's if you go to the podcast tab, you can ask us or, I suppose, similar competing podcasts questions, but you know, we always like seeing questions anywhere you want to throw them. Thanks once again to Fireminer for always making sure that we've got plenty to cogitate over. But otherwise, I believe that it is time that we hit the road. So see ya, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Okay.